And welcome one and all to Dr. Ock's radio show on tnsradio.com. This is Nick M. We've got a very lively show tonight. It's going to be perhaps a little unpredictable because downstairs we've got a pretty packed room full of, I guess there must be 30 people there, engaged in the fourth of our Lawful Solutions meetings, which this time is happening in Manchester. We've got many, many people here who are very active out trying to sort solutions to the no-fit state in which we find ourselves. And hopefully over the next couple of hours, we'll be able to get many of them up here to speak with us. There'll be unfamiliar voices on later on, but we're going to start with an old friend of the Dr. Ock radio show who's on some of the early shows, Pete, who's resisting council tax in Mid Wales. And last time we heard from him, he'd actually managed to get some documentation from the council. Basically, he was, as far as I know, the first person to see a liability order and enabled us to see that it's basically clearly printed on the same word processor as say, the demands for the council tax and for the summons. But he also managed to get in writing the fact that the council raises the warrants.
It looks as though this is what's happening. Just to recap, first of all, we established one of the previous times we spoke that the Council Act does print the summonses. Seems to be fairly general knowledge. So what I did then was I wrote to the court after the liability order hearing, which of course went against me as they all do. After that, I wrote to the court asking to see the liability order, or a copy of one, that the court had issued. And they wrote back and said that the court does hold the records of the applications from the council, but it will be the council themselves that actually issued the liability order. So I thought, very interesting. That's exactly what I expected. So I wrote to the council with exactly the same request. I asked them for a copy of the liability order, and they actually sent me it. But of course, it's printed on the same word processor, by the look of it, same title bar and everything, as the summons that they print, and it basically it's not a court issued document. It's just a document that says that the court did award a liability order and it gives a figure of money. So since that period, I've become, like many other people now, become aware of the Fraud Act of 2006. So I started to wonder if I could maybe apply that to this particular set of events. And did we talk last time about the bailiffs coming and damaging my car?
We did, yes, yeah. Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, so after that, I've been wondering what on earth I'm going to do to get back to the bailiffs about the fact that they're trying to impound my car and in the process damaging it. So bearing in mind the Fraud Act and having received a notice which looks as though it's a warrant, but actually it's not. It's actually called the Notice of Execution of Distress Warrant. So I wrote to the bailiffs pointing out that a notice of execution isn't a warrant. It just is a notice that they're executing one. And so I wrote to them asking to see a copy of the actual warrant that they used to claim authority to come and take away my stuff. And I also pointed out that if it turns out that they don't have a warrant or if one doesn't exist, they may be liable to prosecution under the Fraud Act for fraud by false representation. And I included the relevant section of the Act in the notice. And I got a very quick reply back. I sent it to the directors of the bailiffs, and I had a letter back from the vice chairman, which I thought was pretty good.
That's a pretty good level of response, isn't it?
A very good level of response. It was within the 7 days. And he also referred to my notice as a notice. He didn't actually call it a letter, which is what they usually do, or they call it correspondence, but he actually called it a notice. He couldn't wrinkle out of the fact that they don't have a distress warrant, because what he actually put in the letter was a distress warrant is is an instruction by the council to for the bailiffs to come and levy distress. Now, I've been thinking about how to reply to this. That's as far as it's all got. But basically, he's really, really put his foot in it, because a warrant can't just be an instruction. It's got to be a piece of paper. And at least my hit is that a warrant has to be a piece of paper with a court stamp on it, or a signature of a judge or magistrate.
Certainly only a warrant issued by a court is enforceable under the Magistrates Court Act, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So it's looking as though what happens is that the council's enforcement officer rings up or emails or whatever way they communicate and actually tells the bailiffs that on the basis of the fact that the court issued a liability order, that then empowers them to come round and do bailiff things like steal stuff out of your garden or smash your car up or do whatever it is they're going to do. Or impound your car, whatever. So it looks as though the bailiffs also are acting fraudulently, but I need to craft a reply to him and to actually ask him a few more questions, because basically I'm building evidence for fraud act, for a fraud case against them.
This is the case, isn't it? Because really this has been going on for now year and a half or so, and each time you're interacting with different levels of the system and getting different bits of paper from each one, aren't
you? Exactly,
and it seems likely that they don't have any idea really of what they're handing over to you in its entirety.
No, and I don't think they realise the implications either, because one of the things that we've been hearing about from other people in different parts of the country is the way that the council fraudulently claims costs for every single case. And we actually sat in court and watched them do this. What happened was that before my last case, we went into the public gallery, a whole crowd of us, and we sat there and watched them rubber stamp something like about, I think, 170 or 570 or something, a big stack of liability orders for that 1 month. And that's interesting. It's a lot. It's a lot of cases just for one county, one old county in Mid Wales. That's a lot of liability orders for a relatively small population.
And was that all for council tax?
Yeah, all for council tax liability orders. Now, what actually happened was that the solicitor said to the magistrates, we deal with the block of liability orders in the usual way, shall we, madam? And she said yes. And so the magistrate actually signed the top copy of this huge, great stack of liability orders. So they rubber stamped several hundred of them. And then the solicitor said, so usual arrangement for costs, and the magistrate said yes. So what that actually means is that the magistrate granted, I think, £50 costs for each one of those cases.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so they're making X hundred... £50 for about 2 minutes work,
because effectively they're stamping the top copy.
Yeah, and the to bring this right up to date, when the vice chairman of the bailiff company sent me back his reply, he included a photocopy of the liability order, so-called, which I already had a copy of anyway, but he also included a photocopy of that top copy that the magistrate signed. So now we have a document which is evidence that they rubber stamp all of those hundreds of liability order claims by the council each month.
And this, of course, is exactly what's going on at places like the Northampton Bulk Centre, which is like a court with no courtrooms.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is literally bulk processing huge quantities of documents just with a stamp on the top copy.
Yeah.
And it's admitted that, again, in those cases, as far as the Northampton Bulk Centre, there's also in writing the admission that those documents are issued by the council and not by a court.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So
this is very interesting. So bit by bit, we're getting documentation of this whole process. So bit by bit, I'm forensically going to find every possible bit of information from them. Just And hopefully I can get some other people together to do a class action against them under the Fraud Act 2006.
Ultimately, one of the things that's... this is a bit of a new thing here, the phrase that really it seems to be the paper trail that's doing for them. In the meeting today, I can't remember off the top of my head what the other applications were, but there are other places where, especially the Fraud Act, seems to be extremely useful for this stuff.
I think the couple that are involved with the Child Protection Agency stuff, they were talking about paper trail big time.
We're going to be hearing from Morris and Cherie later. They are new people to the group, have come along this time, but have obviously been working fiercely hard, basically in the family courts. And I think one of them, we'll be hearing from them after Pete, hopefully. One of their shock discoveries, or shock revelations, really, I think the group was surprised to hear that the family court documents fall into the same category as the county council tax documents.
Yes, it seems though, yeah.
That was pretty amazing. That's really, it's the same thing, the liability orders. There's a designated person in the council.
That's it, yeah.
Who basically issues instructions to raise what they call a warrant.
Yeah.
So it's not, they're not just getting council tax out of us and chasing people up using this. These are also the means by which they're effectively stealing children.
Yeah, that's right.
So
there's also another little bit. There's one last detail about this response I had from the bailiffs.
Oh yes,
he signed himself off as a sheriff's officer.
I'm quite interested that this is obviously he's. You said what. What was he in Excel?
He's a vice chairman.
He's a vice chairman of Excel and the sheriff's officer.
Yes.
Which is a public, surely. Is that a public position? Paid by the public person?
I would think so. But the interesting thing is that this is a private bailiff company, as the kind of bailiffs that we have in England and Wales, as far as I understand it, is that this particular type of bailiff is certificated. They're like certificated by a county court somewhere, and it seems that is what gives them authority to do court work, but they only do certain kinds of work. I think council tax, parking tickets, and maybe one or two other categories. So they're not court bailiffs at all. They are certificated, but they work for a private company. So what I'm interested to find out, and this will be the subject of another letter somewhere, probably to the sheriff, is why is the vice chairman of a private bailiff's company also a sheriff's officer? And I suspect that it may be to give it some veneer of legitimacy or some kind of authority, is that the sheriffs have to say, well, it's okay for these private companies to do this. Mm. So there's another level of corruption in there somewhere, I guess, but I really don't know enough until I've written one or two more letters to find out just exactly what's going on. So that about wraps it up on that particular front. But there is one small addition. I don't know if we talked about this last time, but after the bailiffs came and tried to impound my car, my second liability order case was around a week after that, 2 weeks perhaps. And so, ready for the court, I'd typed out a complaint to the justices, which is the first step in asking the justices to issue a summons against the council.
And this was because you'd endured undue stress.
Yes, irregular distress.
Irregular, right, yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is that is authorised by, I believe it is Regulation 46 of the Council Tax Administration and Enforcement Rules 1992. And I think it's Regulation 46, but it's off the top of my head. I'm not totally sure. But that actually says that a person that's been aggrieved by an irregular distress may ask the court to issue a summons against the authority. Now they've been blocking this from every stage, and now I'm at the stage now where at least two clerks of the court in that particular jurisdiction have written to me to say that my complaint is to the bailiffs and not to the court. Mm-hmm. They say it's not something that the court has remit to deal with. But, excuse me, the regulation that says that it is in the same string of regulations which authorises the council to issue a summons against me.
And it's in exactly the same words?
The wording is exactly the same. A person who is aggrieved by da-da-da-da-da may apply to the justices for the issuance of a warrant. I forget the exact wording. So they're actually... And it's the same woman clerk has written to me to tell me that I don't have the right to do this. As has signed the original summons that she authorised the council to issue under the same set of regulations.
I'd forgotten about that.
Interesting.
That is really fantastic, isn't it? And that signature effectively is basically in store in a computer.
Yes.
Part of perpetration. It's evidence in the perpetration of a fraud.
Exactly.
In itself, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's because in the Fraud Act they say creating an article for use in fraud, and apparently that covers all computer stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
So the Fraud Act is very well worth a read. It's only a couple of pages, but it's absolute dynamite.
Every single bit of it as well.
It's
an easy read, and nearly every bit of it is rather strange. Makes you start wondering why it was that they wrote that.
Yeah.
Because it is such an effective instrument for us.
Yeah, written for us. It looks, and it's only 2006. What's that?
It's just 4 years, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And the thing is, of course, that that's the particular act that every single one of these bits of paper you're getting, admitting that the council's issuing the documents, the actual documents themselves, which are not on bonded paper, they haven't got a court, they haven't got the court logo on the
top
of them,
they haven't got a stamp.
No stamp of any sort.
No.
And every single one of these things is effectively in contravention of one or other of these statutory requirements.
Pretty much prima facie evidence of fraud. Yeah.
There's a couple of things I'm particularly interested in this story. One, of course, is the actual role, as you've highlighted, the role of sheriff's officer, and exactly what that means in this context. You know, whether we're dealing with a general because the general hint is, isn't it, is once you if you're actually dealing with sheriff's officers and getting close to dealing with the sheriff, you're starting to get close to the core of the problem.
Yeah.
So you're presumably going to be dealing with him in that sense as well as with them. I'm also interested that they did actually respond in the 7 days and that they referred to your notice as a notice.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And yet they don't seem to be willing to accept that a warrant must say warrant.
No, that's right. I think it's been observed before that they have become so steeped in the fact that this is the system and it's the right one that they've forgotten what real, honest, due process of law actually means.
This does seem to be absolutely the case, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's become apparent downstairs that really now, no due process. Mm. And as Halsbury said, there's no basis in law for the administrative system, even when it's being worked properly.
that's right.
What we're saying here is not only is there a difference between the common law or our natural rights or whatever we want to call that particular system and the system of statutes and legality, but also that the system of statutes such as it is now blatantly not being applied.
That's right.
And I think that when this work started, perhaps it was a little less blatant.
Yeah.
The one other thing that really interested me about this is that when we were talking about council tax bailiffs, and it's a point that's been made before, these private bailiffs who do the council tax work and one or two other things seem to believe that they have powers to do almost anything.
It seems that way, yeah.
And these powers appear to be written into the Magistrates' Courts Act. Is that correct? I'm interested in where we might find out more about what the difference is between these various bailiffs and just exactly what their authority is thought to be.
Yes, I was given to understand that certificated bailiffs, like the ones we're talking about, aren't permitted to break into a property. They can walk in through an open door or an open window.
Right.
It seems that the law does allow for them to consider that an invitation to enter.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware that they could do what they wanted. I could be wrong, but I honestly don't know.
I think it's something that I'd really like to look a little bit further into, because there's certainly some people who do believe that the private bailiffs have got somehow more force. And yet, what we're actually told is that bailiffs are normally third-party interlopers with no statutory power to enforce at all.
Yeah.
So... So perhaps some investigation needs to be made into which of those things
is
true.
Yeah, if anybody out there wants to do some research on it, I'm sure it would be very fruitful. It may well turn out that even though they're certificated by a court, they are actually just glorified debt collection agents.
And there's also always the chance, isn't there, that there's only one of these guys in an office full of people who carry no certification at all.
Mm. Yeah, it's that's quite possible. I know people have been dismissed because their licences run out. But really, I think the situation that we've got is actually more serious than what their true rights are. If it turns out that they are operating without a warrant, and yet they're claiming on their form that they are operating under the authority of a warrant, then this is fraud. So that would negate any action of theirs, whether or not technically they're supposed to be able to break in or not.
And there's also fraud involved in all of the documents, as we're showing, all of the documents that they're enforcing.
Yeah.
And they've admitted to me that they don't necessarily even get to see the documents that they're enforcing. And again, really, that's what you'd expect. What is the point in having these documents if nobody's going to look at them?
Yeah, that's
obviously
right.
Everybody knows they're of no actual real significance.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it you can take by inference from his letter, if he says that a distress warrant is an instruction from the council, well, that means that he can't possibly have seen a paper one, because all he's had is an instruction from the council.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would have said, oh, yeah, we have a court document, and he would have given me a photocopy of it.
It's quite interesting as well, isn't it? Because by and large, the language he's using is quite careful.
Yet
we've seen again and again in your case, especially, that just a rogue half phrase here and there is really letting them down.
That's exactly,
so,
yeah.
Once again, we can see they're actually responding appropriately, and they're starting to get a handle on what's going on.
Yeah.
That you can't actually fake the real thing.
No, that's right. No, you can't fake a piece of paper where it doesn't exist.
No.
But he seems to think that I'm going to be happy with the response that says a distress warrant is an instruction from the council. In what kind of instruction? Is it a phone call or an email?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to write back to him and say, I'm sorry, but I did actually expect to see a piece of paper.
Yeah. Well, it's all of this is good progress for us, certainly. It hadn't occurred to me that the pile of papers you were seeing stamped were all people in that part of Wales. I mean, that's in itself quite an interesting sign, because my impression whilst talking with you and others who are resisting council tax is that the numbers are still quite small. So
yeah.
I'm starting to think by hearing, because you're not, if they've got bulk centres to process these things, then the numbers are perhaps getting quite large.
It's possible.
You know?
Yeah.
And that takes us on, obviously, to the final bit of our conversation, I guess, which is that... is that the council tax has been welling up at these meetings. This is the first of the four for you, but right from the word go, it's been central. And this time, I think we've got some really key people.
Definitely,
downstairs.
Yeah.
Anne, who people will have heard us talk about last time we had a meeting, because she described herself very much as a surprise rebel. She'd basically decided to resist a small part of her council tax. And then watched with ever-growing horror as a completely disproportionate amount of effort was put into chasing this tiny amount.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were kind of, last time we saw her, they'd been driven to the edge of bankruptcy. And she's actually turned up in court herself and is continuing to battle her way through and managed to, without I think entirely realising the significance of what she'd done, she did manage to actually chase a tribunal out of a court.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically with the force of her argument, and because I'm pretty sure because she was acting as a human being and she was steadfastly refusing to bow to the authority of the court. Very interesting that basically a member of the public with the support of her partner has stood up and resisted this. And
yeah.
Although once again, it so far hasn't made any difference to her individual case, the same as with the rest of
us. That's right.
So that brings us on to the subject, basically, of representative action, which is what we must now be looking at,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Because you obviously know a few people. I mean, is Guy working in this area as well?
He is, but in a different county.
Mm, so, yeah.
But I don't think it matters, really.
No. The thing is that if Guy's got substantial people, we know several people, if we can see that there's piles of documents being stamped, then if we can get people to get in touch with us...
Yeah.
Because if it is a fraud, then one person can be rolled over. The thing is, if we've got 300, 400, 500 people, all with different stories, but all managing to show the same stuff, And what's more, if people out there can start asking these questions, this is the thing, it's really great to hear people on the programme, on TNS, who are making progress at a kind of, if you like, the thing is with this is it's discovering how the system works. The law isn't actually made where the law is written. The law is made, I think, in the courts, isn't it?
Mm.
Where it's actually being applied.
I think so.
Really?
I think it ought to be, but with administrative justice, which is administrative injustice, fundamentally what they're doing is they're rubber stamping government diktat, because they are just administrators for a government.
Yeah.
I call it dictatorship. But they probably think, oh, well, we've got a bunch of rules and there's sentencing guidelines, et cetera, et cetera.
So that's just the Nuremberg defence, isn't
exactly.
It? And I mean, it's like Darren said earlier on, it looks like one sort of system. It looks like, you know, kind of, will you move along, please, sir? You know, have you got your lights, please, sir? But ultimately, if you refuse to cooperate, if you scratch the veneer, then you see what we have without doubt now is the rule of force.
That's it.
And the rule of force is the enforcement of diktats from the centre.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so the more the merrier. I mean, a class action would be fantastic with hundreds of people. It'd be fantastic.
Yes. Well, I think it's one of the things we'll be looking to put together. We can communicate with our own.
Yeah.
If we just communicate with our own contact lists and look for people who know people, then one way or the other, I'm sure. This is one area that I think is really going to move forward from these meetings. What's definitely felt is from today's meeting is that we're going to get together ourselves, I think, because there are now serious cracks appearing.
Yeah.
We, of course, do have to acknowledge two things. We have to acknowledge the fact that if people are really, really going to rip over due process, then this might not make too much difference, but we've still got to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that things are very urgent for us now.
We can see...
Like I said, I dropped into a service station on the way down here today and was heartened to see that if I parked for over 2 hours there, I would have to pay some money. And for my convenience, I could pay using my mobile phone. I thought that's so nice of them.
That's wonderful. But
the one that really made me feel I was in this ever-encroaching sci-fi plot was the one in front of me at the loos, which said, "These lavatories are regularly inspected by staff and the police." And so this kind of... The actual thoroughness, the thing that we've been examining in the courts, if you like, is now actually showing itself up in car parks and in toilets and things like that, and it's just going to encourage more people to do what we're doing.
Definitely. Of course, very, very last rider, everybody needs to remember that if we bring a prosecution under the Fraud Act, that is very much within Act of Parliament. It's standing up for common law rights. But it isn't actually a common law action. It would be an action under their law, under statute law.
And that should in theory give us a little, because what's been happening before is that we've been trying to bring it in a common law jurisdiction and they've been taking the statutory redefinition of
the common law issue,
haven't they?
Yeah.
And we're interested thus in some things like misconduct in public office, because that's still a common law offence. Whereas what you're talking about here is basically dealing with them on their own terms, so they can't. Yeah. They're going to find it harder to switch jurisdiction on us.
Yeah. Of course, one obstacle that can be foreseen straight away is actually getting a judge or a clerk of the court to issue the summons in the first place. That is going to be real fun.
Yes.
And of course, that will have its own possibilities for publicity.
And we have acknowledged before that there are many good judges.
Yeah.
And the more of this stuff that goes on, the more of them are likely to come forward.
Yeah. And at some point, some clerk of the court somewhere or some judge is going to actually have to issue the summons.
Yes, for this for the undue.
Under the Fraud Act.
Yeah. Yes, against the council.
Yeah. Well, all three bodies: the council, the courts, and the bailiffs.
Yeah. Well, that'll be a red letter day when the judge raises a prosecution warrant for the court.
I don't know how it's going to happen. Are they going to be shamed into it or what? I really don't know.
It's very difficult. Certainly the pressure's on now.
I think.
Well, thanks very much for coming up and talking to
us. It's great. Yeah, it's a real pleasure.
And I'm sure we'll stay in touch. In fact, we'll have a meeting and talk about it in more detail.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'd love to keep in touch with you as to what's going on.
Well, maybe if I come on the programme again, we'll have some more letters to
delight
everybody.
That'll be really good.
Yeah.
If you want to whip downstairs and bring, you can ask Sherry and Morris to come up. That'd be really great. Oh, look, an extra chair.
Well done, James.
Okay, see
you
then.
Very much. Yeah, thanks, Pete. Thanks a lot. So I'll just take over for here at the helm for a little bit. So I've got lots and lots of interesting stuff that's been happening today. So we'll be able to probably about 7 o'clock, say, after Morris and Cherie. That would be great. Yeah, thanks, James. Yeah, I'm hoping we've got Morris and Cherie are a couple of people who haven't come to any of the meetings before. This is one of the reasons why we move the meetings around the place, is to attract new and surprising people. And we have, as some of you will know, these little 2-minute introduction sessions when each person brings to the meeting whatever it is that's going on for them. And from that, we're generally trying to distill what it is we're going to be exercising ourselves, particularly upon. This time around, it has been the council tax. But Cherie and Morris, they've obviously been very, very busy indeed. And on many fronts. Here they are, in fact. They're coming in now, so I shall seize my chairs to them. I was just going to introduce you folks. We're sitting in front of a laptop here, so do have the chairs. And basically, so long as we speak up...
You see them?
There you go. People will be able to hear us. They are welcome to TNS Radio. This is Dr. Rock's radio show on tnsradio.com. We're at Lawful Solutions meeting in Manchester. It's the fourth such meeting that we've had. And part of a string of guests I'm going to have up here talking to us are Cherie and Morris. Where is it that you're working?
Well, I'm not at the moment. I'm just a self-employed counsellor.
Yeah, so you're working as a team, aren't you?
Yeah, you're working as a team, fighting the dreaded child support agency.
You're the one, Morris, with your head above the parapet, and you're the backroom girl who's doing...
Yes.
Doing our research. Yeah.
So how did it start?
Right, well, it started when they tried contacting me over the telephone, which they couldn't prove who they were. And I sort of severed the communication. I said, you can't prove who you are. If you want to communicate with me, it's in writing. They didn't do that. So all they did was they went straight to my employer. My employer started singing like a canary, giving out all my financial details, how much I was earning. And the next thing I knew, I was having nearly £500 a month taken out of my wages. And it was from there where we started off thinking, this isn't right. They can't just come in and start taking money. I'd give my ex-partner a big chunk of money when we parted.
Yeah.
And these people just coming along and saying, oh, no, you've got to pay towards your children and whatnot. Well, you don't know I'm the liable person. You haven't asked any information. You haven't sent any information out via the post, which is what I asked you to do. And they said, well, our preferred method is by telephone. I said, well, no, years ago, we didn't have a telephone. It was all done like pieces of paper. So we decided things weren't right. And we then decided to set up which was initially a support group.
Right, so it was to help people in a similar...
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, basically what it was, I was at university at the time. I was doing my counselling and psychology course. And there was a couple of theses I had to do, and it sort of struck a chord with me. And then with what Morris had gone through, and having the whole deduction of earnings order placed upon him was done, in my opinion, totally illegally. And I realised, and we sat down one night and had this discussion, and I was in the middle of this thesis, and he was trying to help, and it all sort of amalgamated into one, and that's how it came about. And initially, it was just going to be a small support group put over on the internet, just to see how many fathers out there, you know, just like to talk.
Excellent.
About what they were going through.
Yeah.
And in the short space of approximately, I don't know, 3-6 months, was it,
Morris? Yeah.
It just snowballed from there. And he was coming in from work, and I was trying to sit down and do my uni work, and I was saying, I need to now do some research on the Child Support Act, because it's going from a support basis into an actual they want help about their particular case.
And that was because they, like you, felt that they were being turned over and that must be something to look at.
Yes, definitely.
So at that point, we call this falling down the rabbit hole. So it was the Child Support Act that you first got your teeth into.
Yes.
Is it a big one?
Yes, it is. It sort of, it goes backwards and forwards. And then, of course, there's always amendments that come into play. And then you have to read the amendments. You have to then go through back into the Child Support Act itself. And then obviously it's legalese. They bring all these words into it. And then it's all the Secretary of State now is in control of it and so on and so forth. And that's why a lot of solicitors, the one question we're asked the most of, funnily enough, is why is it family solicitors don't delve into the Child Support Act? Why don't they take on child support cases? And we've got a very good family solicitor we've known a number of years, haven't we?
Yeah.
And I fried his head. And he said, I've been to university, I've gone to college, I've done, 8 years in total, from start to finish of a family solicitor. And he said, you've blown everything out of the water. I've wasted thousands of pounds. And I just said, because you've got to, reading the Child Support Act, and then its amendments and everything else, you have to go back on yourself. And then you go forward again, and then it's back again. Mm. And that's how you're doing it all of the time. Mm. But that's, in my opinion, that's how they want it to be, to confuse.
And to mean that you've got to have the stamina.
Precisely. Yeah. And, yes, how many people give up?
And you've got to be able to look forwards and backwards at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how did your solicitor, just as a matter, how did he respond to this?
He just said, I won't touch child support issues.
Yeah.
I'm a family solicitor, but I won't deal with child support issues. And he actually said, if I do get anyone come to me who's absolutely desperate, he's got a business card. So he had some little business cards. And he passes them along to us and says, please contact these people because they will help you out. They don't give legal advice. There's a disclaimer on the website and everything.
Yeah.
But we will point them in the right direction. And we will say, look, I don't expect you to sit down and read the Child Support Act because most people can't get their heads around it. But start from a base here. And we give them that base. And then they build it from there. And a lot of people then, it's a case of, my God, that's what's happening. That's what's going on. But the thing is, that led us on to then other things within government, other things within the world. Because it has to. Because it goes full circle.
Yeah.
The whole lot goes
through. Right down the rabbit hole.
Of course it
certainly goes.
Yeah. So many warnings that go on there.
So what was the next thing that you hit? Because I mean, I know that you're involved with the CSA quite extensively still. It's still one of the main thrusts, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I did my own court case. The magistrate was on my side, but she says, my hands are tied. And you're thinking, you're coming into, which is purporting to be a place of justice, and their hands are tied. Mm-hmm. And then the second case we did it for the first member who actually joins the association. And again, we were into court with him and said, yeah, we totally agree with you, but our hands are tied. And we thought, right. And it was from there, you know, when they said our hands are tied, something is not right.
Yeah.
And it was from then on the research started. And we got contacted by, it was Brian Gerrish and then John Harris, who put us onto the right track. But the only, I mean, no disrespect to the guys, I mean, they put on the right track, but they only went so far.
Mm.
Right, but then we went beyond. And I mean, they even admitted to us, you know, I said, listen, you know more about this than what I do now. But if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have been led onto the right track.
No.
You know, it's for that, like we do, or them, you know, for put us on the right track.
Well, you start getting involved in the justice system, and I think it goes from there, because then it led on to, with us, we were in the justice system, but we're on the family side. I then had personal things with that many years back with my divorce. And you then marry things up. You then, oh, crikey, that's why that happened and that's why this happened. That's why it goes that way. And it's amazing to think 20 years later it's still going on.
Yeah.
So that piques an interest with me. And then it's like personal things that go on, and it's little things like your parking tickets and little things like this.
Yeah.
And then I then, research must be what I'm supposed to do, because I then tootled off, and it's a case of, well, these private parking companies, there's no law in it. What everyone perceives as the law, it's not lawful.
There's none. No, you can just throw their tickets away.
Yeah, exactly. And then you start, and again, it leads you still back to solicitors, courts, and everything else. And all the big corporation, it leads you into that, no matter what you do. And then it was like personal things, like you got yourself arrested a few years back, and it was dealing with that. Court fines, and it's little things, and you start going into torts and contract and equity and trusts and bonds and the whole thing. You think, oh my God, so you had a little piece missing, and then you get a personal experience, you try and deal with that, and you again, I did the research and I think, right, okay, that letter's going to go out. The paper trail is very important. It has to be. The paper trail with anything. It doesn't matter if you've got a small case and it's a couple of letters and then you reach a conclusion, or you can have a whopping case in our case, the paper trail is still continuing, isn't it?
Yes. This is very good. This is something that Pete said as well.
Yes.
The
thing is, if you've got the paper trail and you look back through it, oh, there's so many holes. I mean, the paper trail, for instance, can be anything. It doesn't have to be what you started. For instance, when you got arrested, and we looked at the two police officers, right? There were traffic police in a vehicle, and I went through their statements that they'd supplied to the court. And I sat there one evening, and he was busy doing something else. And after about an hour and a half, 2 hours, he came in, and there was little post-it things all over our copies of these statements, wasn't there? I said, just have a read through. And I said, how on earth can any, be it a lay magistrate, a dependency magistrate or whoever, how can they sit behind that bench, read these two statements and think that's the truth?
Yeah.
Because they were side by side in the vehicle.
Yeah.
They were side by side the whole time. They were questioning you, arresting you, putting you in the back of the wagon and you name it.
What was their problem with you, just as a matter of interest?
They stopped me for allegedly driving front fog lights on, but they were following me, so that was and as well, because he wouldn't identify himself, he wouldn't show his warrant card, so I wouldn't give him a name, and I was arrested for not giving him a name.
Okay.
But I'm reopening that case.
So they took you in, did they?
Spent the night in there, but I'm reopening that case.
Did they let you go? Did you have to sign anything?
They let me go, and it ended up where... I was summoned into court. I didn't sort of contract with them.
Mm-hmm.
They found me guilty in the absence, and
they summoned you for failure to provide details required.
And it was a case of something not right here. So, like I said, I've reopened the case, and it got very, very twitchy with it, which is the questions what you're asking. No, it's the exact same thing with the CSA now. We are governed by the Child Support Act, right? Or with the police, you're governed by the Road Traffic Act. So I don't know, when I passed my test, I wasn't told about the Road Traffic Act. When you apply for your driving license, you're not told about the Road Traffic Act. And it's the same with the CSA. They hide behind this thing. So because I didn't contract with them, I then went back to them now and said, right, I want to see a copy of this original maintenance inquiry form that I purported to resign. And I want it made available at my name with Job Centre Plus. And they come back and said, we don't make it available. So I went back and said, under what law allows you to refuse to make it available? And they told me, said, well, there is no law, but however, under data protection, it doesn't say it's safe practice to do so. So now we have the Child Support Agency minions, members of staff, who were trying to pass laws from behind their office desk. So they came back and said, well, we can give you a copy. I said, I don't want a copy. I want the original because it has my property on.
But to bear in mind that he hasn't asked to be given the original. He's not saying, I want to take it back. I want to take possession of it again.
Yeah.
He hasn't said that. All he stated is, I want to be able to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when he said, please make it available at my nearest Job Centre Plus, that is telling you, I don't want to take possession of it again. Can you just make it available for me to either look at it, sign it, adjust something upon it? And they just won't do it.
Yeah, they won't do it. So they kept saying, you know, if you want a copy of it, you can apply for it under your data protection things, which is what I did do.
Yeah.
I got all them, and I mean, it's like half a rainforest what they chopped down for the JTS.
Yeah.
And we went through it, thought, there's no sign of this maintenance inquiry form with my signature on. Now, they've confirmed to me that in order for them to start taking money from you, you have to fill in this form, and you have to sign it to confirm the details are true and accurate.
And they've also stated, just to interject, they've also stated in black and white as well, which other people may not be aware of, they need a maintenance inquiry form if they want to do any form of legal action against you for failure to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So for all these fathers out there who've never done what a maintenance inquiry form is, they've never filled anything in like that, they've never signed anything like that, when they later get into arrears or for whatever reason they have an issue with the child support agency, when the child support agency then goes to do action in a court, how can they do it if they haven't got the original maintenance inquiry form? So they haven't got the contract that binds.
And this again is a basic thing, isn't it? As we heard, the mortgage or thing is to do with a lack of contract.
Exactly. So again, it all marries up. So, it's all synonymous.
So how did it go with these two coppers then? You'd spotted that they presented you with two completely contrary reports.
Yeah, well, I mean, that case is still ongoing. Let's say they found me guilty. But what I did with them... all these cases which happened to me personally has actually helped us with the charitable owned agency, because what I then did was I actually involved the DVLA and the Ministry of Justice, because the DVLA says that we are administrators for the courts. So you think, oh, right, that's interesting.
Did they really?
The DVLA are merely administrators for the Magistrates Court service. So what I did then was I wrote up to the Ministry of Justice. Now, this is the same if any fathers are faced with the CSA. We can revoke your driving licence. They can't. They haven't got the power to do that. Because I went off to the DVLA and I said, can you please tell me where you informed me of the Road Traffic Act? Can you please tell me where you informed me also of the Child Support Act? And I also went back to the Child Support Agency. Right, well, show me where you informed me of this law.
And the same with the driving test you said earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They don't tell you.
So there's not full disclosure, we're saying.
Exactly.
The
I said to the DVLA, I wrote off to them as well, make my original driving license application form available. They said, we can make a copy, but you have to pay £5. I said, who's giving you permission to make money from my property?
Yeah.
So the DVLA application form is our property. I said, my signature upon it is my property. You make it available. They then have to come back and admit they destroyed the documents. So they destroyed the contract. So we have a copy of it on our computer. Well, that means a printer is forging my signature.
And again,
it's not
it also goes to the issue of when you decide that you want to learn to drive and you want your licence, the DVLA don't tell you, by the way, that you are aware that when you send any documents back to us, all we do is store those documents for 3 months. Yep. After that 3 months, we then do with that document or documents as we please. They don't tell you that.
More lack of full disclosure.
Of course it is.
Exactly. You know, they don't say the child support agent can come in and remove your licence. The next funny thing was, I also did a freedom of information request to the Ministry of Justice. The Ministry of Justice took me 6 months before I finally got the answers out of them.
Yeah.
And they confirmed that penalty points are issued against the person and not the driving licence. So I sent my driving licence back to the DVLA and said, there you go, there's a confirmation from the very people who you are administrators for, and you admitted that you act on the good faith of the court. Well, there you go, there's a proof, remove the points, right, from the driving licence.
And that's still ongoing.
And that's still ongoing.
There was a telephone call just this week, at the beginning of this week, and the DVLA said you will have a response to your request by the 16th of December. So we're waiting with bated breath.
Yeah. Oh, you're certainly keeping them busy.
Yep. Definitely, so, which is why we say, again, the paper trail with anything, the paper trail is important. And don't ask all your questions all in one go. Do it bit by bit.
Yeah.
Always refer back to your paperwork. Mm-hmm. Because even if you forget something, if you refer back, you'll always remember it. When you go through it, there's so many holes and there's so many lies, and then all of a sudden the picture forms of all the corruption.
Yeah.
And there is corruption out there.
We've got so much evidence of corruption going on with the CSA. It's unbelievable.
I mean, you've got corruption with the courts, there's CSA staff, and it goes to every level. It goes from the minion behind the phone.
Yeah.
Exactly, to up to the chiefs.
Yeah.
We serve documents on the Child Support Agency. It's in peculiar that the chief executive decided he wasn't going to renew his contract, didn't he?
Correct.
And that was it, he went.
That's really great, isn't it? That's a real result, that is.
Yeah, they certainly don't like the fact that I've made the CSA trustee. They came back and said, well, from what we can understand, it's not accepted.
They can't do that with the documents.
What legal qualifications have you got, and under what laws not accepted? And they can't tell you. But it's absolutely.
You did the same with the DVLA. Yeah. You did the same with the DVLA, and the next thing, Noel Shanahan's taken up a different post in a completely different part of the government.
Now you see, I find this very exciting because really obviously, everybody's been talking about failure of due process. You were telling us earlier on that people have had quite substantial amounts of money taken from their bank account. Was it £5,000?
Yes. Yeah.
People have had their driving licence taken off them because they believe that it's possible.
Yeah.
But we're constantly looking for these small signs, like people who are seeing the magistrates out of the court, you know.
Yeah,
they've entered the ring, put their gloves on and then left. But I'm interested to hear that you're actually getting senior executive officers
well,
to
yeah,
do
things. I mean, obviously there are going to be people out there that will say, oh, crikey, you're a small organisation, you're a small little association, what makes you think that you've done that? But we sit there and say, it just seems funny that we've been doing this for 4 years. We get a certain document and that's served upon them, and then all of a sudden, a few other people also did it as well. It wasn't just you, was it? A few other people did it as well within the same organisation, and then suddenly, fucked and gone. Mm. It's too much of a coincidence.
Once again, it's really great, isn't it? You've got a few people doing
yes.
it. So
yeah.
although you're not, we were talking about a kind of representative action earlier, but yeah. the other way of doing it is to get several people to lodge the paperwork
yes.
individually.
You've yeah. got to sit down. You've got to explain the pitfalls, if there are any. You've got to explain that none of you are legally qualified and you don't want to be. Mm-hmm. But you've got to explain, look, are you passionate about your own particular case? Yes, I am. How far are you willing to push this? Because you're going to have to push the boundaries.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to confine you in their boundaries.
That's right.
They're trying to say, stop it, behave and do as you're told. So you've got to push that boundary back and say...
Work out how far
exactly,
you're prepared
yeah,
to
because
go.
It's, you may be telling me it's better for my children. However, it's detrimental to me. So if it's detrimental to me, how's that then going to benefit my children? Because they're going to see a father who's completely stressed. Mm. 9 times out of 10, a father who's out on the streets because he's lost his property.
And this does seem to be the intent of the courts,
precisely,
doesn't it?
Precisely. This, I mean, this is another thing that we're, every aspect of the Child Support Agency we're passionate about, because every aspect is wrong. Mm. That is what we say.
Aren't they about to dissolve it and turn it into something else?
No. Basically, what they're doing there is they pass it, they say, right, well, it's no longer the Child Support Agency, it's now called the Child Maintenance Enforcement Commission, basically because we found out the Child Support Agency has 21,000 £782 worth of CCJs registered against them. So what they do is they then dissolve the name and
they
start
took it away from the hands of the DWP as well.
Yeah.
So this CMEC thing started up. Yeah. And then they introduced all different things. And what they introduced with CMEC was from 2008, I believe, was it?
Yes,
2008. The single mothers who were actually on state benefits and getting tax credits and child benefits and all that. And the ones who weren't working and they could get a little bit of the rent paid and the community charge paid for them. What they actually brought in with the CMEC thing and everything, which we now know was a precursor to what's going to come in next year in 2012.
Do you know what CMEC stands for?
Child Maintenance and Enforcement Commission.
Okay, yeah.
What they introduced was that the mothers who were on state benefit and were claiming housing benefit, council tax relief and whatnot, they actually said you can now have your maintenance and it doesn't affect any of those things. So they could keep the state benefit, they could keep the rent, they could keep the council tax relief, and they could keep the maintenance. The only other thing that they don't tell fathers is a father can go to work, he can work 50 hours a week or whatever, and as Maurice said, he can, you know, every 4 weeks he's paying £500, say, in child maintenance, mm-hmm. based on his wage. It could be just one child he's paying for, by the way, for that amount. The mother can be on full state benefit, council tax relief, rent relief, and tax credits or whatever as well.
Yeah.
But prior to what they've now started to introduce, she only got, it was £10 a week, first of all, and then £20 a week. So when we first set up the association, this is what was going on. So we had fathers saying, well, I'm paying £500 every 4 weeks. Mm. And we were saying, well, we've got some news for you, and we're ever so sorry. But you're going out there working 50 hours a week, some of them, as we know, very hard, you know, jobs.
Yeah.
And your child is only seeing £10 a week, i.e. £40 a month of that maintenance money. And they were going, you're joking, where the hell is the rest of the money going? It's going into the government pocket.
Is that right?
And that is correct.
That written down as
yes,
well?
Yes, it was going into the government pocket. And what the government, what the Secretary of State at the time, should I correct myself, was saying was that was there to pay the mother's benefit bill. Now, anyone who's been on any form of state benefit, she doesn't get £400 a week or £400 a month in state benefit. It's well below that because they dictate to us what we are supposed to be able to live on, members of the public.
So
then it raised another question. Where the hell is he, even if he's paying her benefit bill, so he's paying income tax, he's paying national insurance, he's paying his child maintenance, and then he's paying her benefit bill. So a father who goes out to work, he's actually paying 4 times.
Yeah,
and fathers didn't realise this, and they were like, "Oh my God, yes, you're right."
Again, that's the kind of general principle, isn't it? That's the way the whole thing works.
Of course. And then what we found out was the few bits of money that were left over, if you took her state benefit bill out the calculation, where was it going? I then did some more research, and we found out where was it going.
going into the consolidation fund.
The consolidation fund.
Which, as we've heard before, is goes for repaying the debt and for fighting war.
Basically protecting poppy fields. Anyone can go onto any research tool and put in the consolidation fund and find out exactly when it was started. It was started in this country by Pip the Younger, who was the Prime Minister at the time. He was the one who started it in this country. But believe it or not, there's a consolidation fund in every country around the world. Every single one. Mm. And in every single country, it is called the consolidation fund.
Yeah, yeah.
You look it up and you'll be amazed.
So there probably is one consolidation fund.
Yes, exactly. Part of the maintenance was actually going in that pot. Mm. What started happening, certain people that were coming to us were sending in certain pieces of paperwork, which we were telling them, you know, send this letter in, send that letter in, and do this and do that. And the next thing, they introduced the ZMEC, which is the Child Maintenance Enforcement Commission, and they started to change the rules a little bit. So then again, we noticed then a wave happened, and we thought, oh, right.
Just as you're catching up.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So the wave happened, and then they changed everything. Oh, now it's any mother who's on state benefit can keep all of the maintenance and all the benefit and the rent relief and council tax relief and everything. And then all of a sudden, they've changed it again, yet again.
Yeah.
Which is this new one they want to bring in next year.
Well, the one is where they want to charge the parent with care for using the services of the...
So they're adding the next layer of charge.
But the thing is, I mean, if this is supposed to be a government-run agency, right, why are you paying twice? Because you're paying taxes, which you already paid for that service, so why are you paying twice? And we put loads of objections in to the Green Paper for that, and it created a lot of waves for them. Because the response is what was coming back, we thought... Yeah, we've stopped them there, they've stopped them there, they've stopped them there, stopped them
so
there.
So it might be a small organisation, but you're definitely making waves.
Which brings us on to your
relation with Darren and the People's Public Trust.
Yes.
We were put in touch with Darren, and he was telling us about the trust and how the trust works and how everything we deal with in everyday life, you know, from your driving licence to checking a bank loan, is all to do with trusts. And it made sense. It was the questions what we start asking, because when we did the research on how a trust works, we're like, bingo. And then when we start asking the question to the CSA, it's like, we're not prepared to enter into any further correspondence. That is where you want them, because your paper trail acts as your trial.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and you are, as we pointed out before, sometimes the solution is stopping them in their tracks.
Correct.
You know, you might not get a piece of paper saying you're free, we're never going to hassle you again, but actually stopping them like that is a result.
The key comes back and saying, we are a Crown body and we are governed by the Child Support Act. I'm saying, well, if you're a Crown body, so is the Ministry of Justice, right, they're a Crown body as well. Well, you've got CCJs registered against you, so how can the Crown issue a CCJ against itself?
Yeah. And not only that, when you go into court, it's a conflict of interest.
And if you've got a CCJ, you must be trading.
We put all that information on our website.
Which is
the deadbigdadsassociation.co.uk.
Right, we'll make sure that we write that down and put it in the notes for this.
Yes.
You've also been turning up with the People's Public Trust suit and badge on, haven't you?
All it was is, we've done a few court cases, and I actually did it as a sort of trial run, and I actually said to Mo, I said, look, we've got a court case today, and we normally try and get as many of our members of the forum to attend the cases, and we all sit down and we all do a court of record. And what I mean by that basically is we sit down and then we notice everything that's been said, and we write it down, and we're all told, go home, type it up. And it's everyone's version of it in their own words, but it's great, because one person gets taken into court, he ends up with one case is 12, lots of court record.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it was, you know, because magistrates' courts are never on a court of record, as we know.
Right.
So we do our own.
The class is an inferior court.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, it was a case of the two particular cases, and the first one was good because it's in judges' chambers, and I thought, oh, so it's private matter. It's in judges' chambers, I wonder if I can get him to be a bit, you know, like, mm. Mm. So I said, well, I'm not going to go in on behalf of deadbeat dads, as you know, we normally do if we go together. And I'm not going to, I'll do the court of record still. And I said, but I'm going to go in a different capacity. So he's like, oh God, what have you got planned this time? And I said, well, I'm just going to go in with me People's Public Trust badge on, which I've mocked up myself, I've never been photographed on, with Darren's permission. And it's got the PPT on it and whatnot, and I'm a volunteer.
Yeah.
And so basically, I'll put that on. And I just went in and I sat quietly, as I normally do, behind the scenes, and I sat in a chair right at the back, didn't I? And he's there sitting next to the guy who's in the court and whatnot. So they all introduce themselves, and then I'm just sat very quietly at the back. And then the next thing, the judge says, right, can I have everyone's names who's present in the room? So they all say who they are. And then he just suddenly went, oh, and can I have the lady's name who sat very quietly at the back? So then I'll just say my Christian name and the capacity that I'm there for. And basically, I just explained I was a volunteer with the PPT, and he says, oh, and what's the PPT? So I was telling him. And I said, basically, it's an organisation whereby we go into situations, people who are in the public sector who are working for members of the public, and we just make sure that you are doing your job, serving as doing it for the members of the public. And at that, I saw this very space change. I thought, well, I wasn't keen on that idea. Yeah.
And so this is exactly what Darren wanted. He wants us to change the situation simply by watching
it. So I just said, if you don't mind, I'm just going to be quiet and I'm just going to take notes. Yeah. Do you object to that? So he'd ask him. And he said, no, I have no objection. Does anyone else? And they all sort of sat there.
The courts are our courts.
Exactly. So then it was, and then it was a case of everything started. And then he got a bit startled and a bit worried. And the next thing he says, sorry, I'm just going to have to leave. And he just shut out the room.
Brilliant.
And we just sat there like, what's gone on?
Well, I think that's really brilliant, that is.
And didn't come back in.
That can bring us to the end of this chat, but I mean, we'll swap Skype details and have you on again. Yeah. That'd be really brilliant. Because really, the point you've made there is that, the point all along the line is that you two are changing the situation wherever you go by opening up the act, by looking at it, and by presenting it to them.
Yeah.
Just by watching the system and giving a bit of a poke, you're absolutely changing what goes on. And I think another important point that's been made there is your meeting with John Harris and Brian Garish. They're both, highly regarded people in the movement. Brian especially is still out there. He's been to some of these meetings, putting his stuff forward. And I think it's really brilliant that you pointed out to people that they took you to a given point and then you ran with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because now the rabbit hole is absolutely full of individuals.
But
I'm particularly impressed by your intro this evening. Was great.
Yeah.
And it's really good of you to come and talk to us.
We enjoy it, and it's something we're not going to stop doing.
We have a good following as well. We haven't grown too big, too fast, which is how we like it.
And we're not really bothered about people saying, it's great what you do. All we want to do is when we get a result to a case or we get a father who's got peace of mind and he can actually carry on living his life, that is our remedy. That is us saying... Good.
You've kept people off the end of a rope, haven't you?
I mean, we've opened people's eyes. Like I said, we've got a good follow-up. We've got a good team of area reps. I mean, it's not just us doing the research on
We've got appointed area reps.
We've got our appointed area reps.
Fantastic. It's really growing.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing that is a sign of success, is that if you're managing to get self-motivated people out there and you're training them to do the job. Yeah. Did you, just as a matter of interest, did you get trained with the PPT?
It was just literally talking to Darren and asking Darren, can I class myself as a volunteer? And he said, of course you can.
Excellent.
And it was just discussing the court cases, the times that we've seen him. Sometimes we come here ourselves and we just have a quick afternoon with him or something. And it was just discussing ideas and going backwards and forwards. And he just said, you're not an idiot. Just go with it because I've got every confidence in you. Just do it. So that's what I started to do.
Well, I'll give you a round of applause on that. That's absolutely excellent.
No, it's just great to get the results that you can. Yeah. And we just try, all we want to do is just help as many of the fathers as we can.
So again,
because when you're stuck in that, when you're stuck in the CSA, a lot of them can't see a way out.
This, again, really, really important. People who do find a way through, who are doing the job, more and more are standing up now for lots of other people. Yeah. And that's the important thing about these meetings, is that what I'm seeing turn up now and at the Universal Community Trust meeting is that what we're getting is red hot hubs of other networks now.
Yeah.
Some of them, like you, are involved in the lawful stuff like we are. Others of them are kind of doing light body work in Glastonbury.
Yeah.
But they're now turning up. So what we're getting, instead of single people, is we're getting whole networks now on our mailing list.
Well, we've been doing our own conferences. I mean, I set up a PowerPoint presentation. We've got about three or four conferences we've done. And we did one down in London. You know, we really opened people's eyes on You know, because it's all very well me just sitting here explaining stuff, but when you actually get it on the screen,
the evidence is there.
What we'll do is we'll set up a conversation while I've had a time to look at your website, and we can go through some specific examples. Yes. It'd be really good to have you on the show again.
Yeah, look forward to it.
I'll sort of usher you out in the meantime.
Thank you very much
for the work you're doing. deadbeatdadsassociation.co.uk.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, keep up the excellent work. We'll see you soon. Glaylin. Oh, Glaylin Barraclough. Excellent stuff. Yeah, indeed. Nice to see you, matey. We're kind of live on TNS Radio at the moment. This is actually an example. The last meeting that I was at with the Universal Community Trust, I said that several of the 60 people that turned up were people I knew from more or less independent groups who were doing other work in other places, and one of them was in fact Grayling Barraclough, who did the first recorded interview ever with me. Actually, Grayling, it's really great to see you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, really well. It's great to see you again, and it was fantastic to see you at the meeting in Nottingham. I was going down there, I didn't expect to see anybody that I knew, but it was heartening to see so many familiar faces. Yeah,
that's one of the great things, isn't it? And more of them each time, more people that you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
wasn't that a friendly meeting, that one?
Oh yeah, absolutely, definitely. And I didn't really know much about the situation with the Universal Trust before that, but it sounds fantastic, doesn't it? Sounds like a really great idea.
Yeah.
All the people involved sound really great. I just hope they can get it off the ground, yeah?
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty well advanced that now. We actually heard tonight, didn't we, that the first of their treaties has been signed, and that there's things to do with line of credit and stuff, which are still progressing. But I know that one of the reasons why the people who are involved are hard to get in touch with is because they're working really hard at trying to get some major results before Christmas. So hopefully that one in the new year, we'll be able to look at that. Later on in the programme, we might be able to get Darren up because he's been doing the People's Public Trust, who Cherie was just talking about. But the reason why we've got you here is because you're actually making a bit of a documentary on this whole subject, aren't you?
Yeah, well, what it is, Nick, you know about history, don't you? You've done a lot of talks on history and things like that. The problem with history at the moment that we have is that it is controlled, really, by the powers that be. They let us know. Apart from researchers like yourself that are going out there and finding it, there's a lot of it which is controlled. And I think what we need to do is we've got the ability now to create our own documentation of history, of the history that's happening now, the things that are happening now. And what I want to do is document, not necessarily just the Free Man Movement and the People's Public Trust and things like that, but the system as a whole, the system that we're living in now. One of my inspirations is George Orwell's book, The Road to Wigan Pier, which often gets overshadowed by his more well-known works.
Yeah.
But it's a great piece of writing where he talks about the northwest of England, which is where I'm from, not originally from, it's where I've lived for most of my life. He talks about the system at that time, and it's a fascinating read. And what I'm trying to do is just document the system. And that's the name of the documentary. That's what it's called. The system. It's an ongoing project. Mm-hmm. And it really encompasses the fact that the current system is deliberately failing people.
Yeah.
I think that's what more and more people are waking up to now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only is it failing them, it is deliberately failing them.
And that's where you're concentrating the drive of this particular work, is it?
Yes. And that's mm-hmm. where the Free Man Movement comes into that. Because I'm looking at alternatives to the... I'm looking at the current system, just like Orwell did.
Yeah.
And similar to him, I'm looking at possible alternatives. Because this can't continue. The way things are going could not continue. I think a lot of people, certainly your listeners here, will accept that. So what I'm saying is, what are the alternatives? Are they viable? Yeah. Is it just pie in the sky?
So you're looking basically at where people are getting into trouble and you're looking at solutions. Where is your work taking you outside the freedom movement and... In the world, what's the wider context behind this for you?
What I'm really keen to do at the moment, I really haven't done enough of this, maybe I've done too much of the Free Man stuff in some ways, is just to speak to ordinary people and find out about their lives and find out about their issues. And also to draw a parallel. For example, I'll give you one example in the documentary. I go to a place called Tulketh Mill. It's a huge mill building. Obviously, it's not a cotton mill anymore because all the cotton mills in Lancashire closed down in the sort of the 50s and the 60s. But at the time Orwell was writing in the 30s, it was a fully functioning cotton mill.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the same building's there, but it's a call centre. It's a call centre for a telecommunications company. So what I'm saying is, well, yeah, things have changed, but really they've stayed exactly the same.
Yeah.
And there's a famous saying, isn't it? In order for things to stay the same, they need to change. So in other words, the powers that be, they need to give us this illusion that things are moving on, things are changing.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, well, is it any different from work, from spending most of your working hours in a mill to feed the system and spending most of your waking hours in a call centre to feed the system?
Mm.
And then what I'm saying is, well, the current workers, you know, the call centre workers, maybe they are better off than the mill workers in certain ways. You know, well, it's debatable, but I mean, they've got, you know, flat screen televisions and they've got indoor toilets, they've got central heating.
Doesn't matter how well you decorate and furnish your prison cell, it is still a prison cell, but...
Well, exactly. Yeah. So,
and I think with also, they may well have been, I mean, I know things were grim in the mills and stuff, but there was still a degree of freedom and the actual culture of Albion and, you know, some vestiges left. It seems to me that in the call centre, you really do see something out of a Will Smith movie.
Yeah.
You know, serried ranks of, mind you, it was serried ranks of people in the mills.
Well, I mean, I think the point that I was trying to get into the documentary was to question what is the progress that the ordinary people have made since the 1930s. Have we made any progress? Have we made any progress at all?
The conclusion is...
Well, the conclusion really is up to the person watching the documentary.
Yeah.
It's for them to make the conclusion. I'm merely presenting facts.
Yeah.
I'm speaking to people. I'm getting their perspective on it. Yeah.
Are you finding more people are aware that something is not correct? I mean, as you're wandering around normal people, are you finding a lot of them expressing the kind of... I mean, this is a specialist meeting we're at here, and I'll ask you about that in a minute. But are you feeling repercussions of this yet in the people around us?
I'm finding, when I speak to ordinary people, they often find it very, very difficult. This is a common problem, I think. Very, very difficult to vocalise. So in other words, they know something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They know the system isn't working for them. They know it's built not to work for them. But it's very difficult for them to put the finger on it, for them to vocalise exactly where the problem is.
I think if we're finding that people are starting to suspect that the system is not working for them and is deliberately not working for them, then we are making for a big change, aren't we?
Yes.
Because it's interesting that you should bring George Orwell up, because 1984, the difference between the government that was pulling that off and what might be regarded as normal governments, the governments before, in fact, 1948, which is what he wanted to call it, is that the government in 1984 admitted that they wanted power for the sake of power. They admitted that they didn't give a toss about the humans, that all they wanted was to maintain power. And if you're saying that people are starting to realise that we're being deliberately abused, then we're about to see an awakening.
Hopefully, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my main thrust at the moment is to speak to more ordinary people.
Mm.
Because the free man movement is so vibrant at the moment, that has been kind of my main focus.
Yeah.
But I've been to the New Community Project at the conference in Nottingham, that's on the documentary. I've also been to visit a fantastic project in Herefordshire. And you know, Guy's here tonight.
Yes, so this is the manor.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
How's it going there?
Fantastic. I was very, very impressed.
When were you there?
Just the other day.
Excellent.
Just the other day. Just
bring
the other day.
Bring us up to date on what's happening at Guy's manor. What did you see?
I think there are a wonderful bunch of people, really friendly, very welcomed me with open arms, some amazing ideas. They've got their own water supply, which is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking of, you know, they're starting to move towards growing their own food and things like this. The accommodation at the moment, there's a lot of tents, a lot of teepees. They've not got anything. They've got one straw house at the moment,
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic in itself that they've actually got one.
Yeah,
you know,
they built that quite recently, didn't they?
They built that in the summer, yeah.
Yeah.
They built that in the summer. So it was really heartwarming to see something physical.
Yeah.
Because with the other community projects, obviously nothing physical there yet. And I think what people need to see, people that are interested in this movement, they actually need to see a working community that's viable, that's sustainable. And when people see an alternative, and I think that's a lot of this is about that people, they do realise something's wrong, but they need to have an alternative that they can see before they make that jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the community itself is doing great, and people will see that.
There
were some great interviews down there with some of the people there, and people see that on the documentary,
So can we see the documentary now in its primitive state? Or
no, no, it's not. It's not. It's not edited yet, and it will be. You know, it's a fairly. You know, from my point of view, I want to get it out as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
This is not for entertainment. If you watch a documentary now on the mainstream news channels, it is pure entertainment. There's no substance behind it. Nobody speaks for more than 2 minutes in an interview. In fact, more than a minute normally.
No, indeed.
It's all cutaways. It's all music. Flash, 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 flash. You know, Ian Hislop did one the other day, supposedly about bankers, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a complete, you know, it's just a joke. I mean, how can anyone take it seriously? The amount of deference he gave to Lord Rothschild, you know. And this is the other thing. If you get a documentary now, what I'm finding is when they interview ordinary people, they have a completely patronising... It's almost like taking the piss out of them or something.
Yeah.
Completely patronising, yeah. Making them look stupid,
yeah.
Ignorant. Yeah. On the other hand, when they interview someone in authority...
Or a scientist or...
Yeah, yes. It's worship. It's almost like worship. It goes from one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
Now, I want to take just normal, ordinary people and build them up. I don't want to take the piss out of them or make them look stupid. I just want to give them a platform.
Yeah.
That's all I'm about. It's... I shouldn't be doing this, Nick. Mm. Honestly, I shouldn't be. I've got better things to do with my time.
Yeah, yeah.
I shouldn't be doing it. Someone on the BBC should be doing it, but they're not.
No.
They're not giving people the platform. They're not giving them, you know, some of the interviews on there are 10 minutes long. Well, you wouldn't get that on the mainstream, but people need that.
How many of the views that you're hearing do you ever hear on the mainstream, on the Jeremy Ryan show or exactly. What have you?
Yeah.
None of it at all. So you... Have you any idea when we're likely to get a chance to have a look?
What I was going to say is if people email me, I'll give my email now, and then I can send them the link as soon as it's ready, and that will hopefully be by the end of the year. So I'll give my email out. I'll read it out first, and I'll go through letter by letter. It's grayling.barraclough@googlemail.com. So that's grayling.barraclough@googlemail.com. And maybe you could put that on your website or something.
Yeah, I can do that. I can put it on the website also. Obviously, we'll be keeping in touch.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And so perhaps once we've got it together and people have a chance to see it and things, we can get back together and, you know, I'll always be interested to hear what you're doing anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Have you got any thoughts on the quality? Because I know you've been interviewing people practically non-stop since the beginning of the day.
Yeah.
Have you any thoughts on the quality of what's going on at this particular meeting?
Oh, I think it's great. Absolutely. This is a dream come true for a documentary maker like myself. You know, it's an absolute dream come true to get access to all these amazing minds and amazing people. I think Roger Hayes made a great point. He's on the documentary as well, although not from today's meeting, from earlier on. But he made a great point when these are the new leaders, really. And I've often thought that, Nick. I've often thought the people I see, I mean, a group called New Horizons as well, which...
Yeah, I talked about New Horizons.
Yeah.
One of my favourites.
Brilliant,
There in newhorizonsstanns.co.uk, I think it is.
That's the one, New Horizons St Anne's.
Been doing the job for over 10 years now.
That's
getting
it.
The word
that's
out.
The one. But I've often thought, Nick, that when I see some of those people at the front, I'm thinking, these should be the people in power.
Mm.
These are the people with the genuine, people-centred, the good ideas which really could change things.
Yeah.
And we know the people in power at the moment are criminals. We already know that. So it's a case of who are we going to replace them with? And when I see the people here today, I think there are genuine people that have got proper solutions.
Yeah.
So it's very heartwarming to be here today. And hopefully, some of the, you know, obviously some of this footage will form part of the documentary,
I mean,
the documentary, just so people know, is an ongoing project.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's ongoing. Yeah.
I think it'd be really interesting to see how it goes. Once you get in touch with normal people, my guess is you'll find them saying things that are extremely resonant with the stuff you've been hearing here and at the Nottingham gig, and that you'll probably be able to look at parallels between, you know, because they say that, you know, if some of us are on the cutting edge of a cosmic awareness, then there'll just be very few there. There'll be quite a lot of people who've developed a global awareness at that point, but still not very many compared with the population. Most of the population will still be in a tribal awareness. But as we all kind of move up the link, you're definitely going to find the waves of this kind of, this waking happening down there in society, I think.
Yeah.
And I personally really look forward to seeing the results.
Definitely.
What I'm probably going to do now is ask Del to play us a couple of tunes so that I can go and see who I can round up for the last half hour or so, because it's 7:30, you're listening to
Dr. Ock's radio show on tnsradio.com. And that was Grayling Barraclough talking to us about his upcoming documentary about the no-fit state, and especially about solutions, looking at what it is that we the people can do to replace the thing that is obviously and thankfully going away. So I also like to thank, at this point, in case I forget at the end, I'd like to thank Del Quark, because he's doing the streaming for tonight, he's doing the hosting for tonight's show, which means that I can sit here and talk to my laptop in some comfort without worrying about all the bells and whistles and things. Hopefully you'll get a bit of a tune now, and I should just spend 4 or 5 minutes going and seeing who I can round up from downstairs. And I'll be back with you for the last 25 minutes or so of the show, after which hopefully we'll be followed by... Welcome back live to the Dr. Ock Radio Show on tnsradio.com. We've been talking to you tonight from live from a lawful solutions meeting that we're having in Manchester. Heard from Pete on council tax and from the Deadbeat Dads Association on all manner of things they've been doing. And from Grayling Barraclough on a documentary he's making about the state of the no-fit state of the nation, the people, and some of the lawful rebellion and lawful stuff that's going on. And my final guest on tonight's show, I'm really happy to have with me, the lovely Eleanor from Passing Clouds in London. We heard from you, didn't we, Eleanor, talking about Passing Clouds last time.
Can you just take a moment to... I've worn a special outfit for the show.
Yes, indeed. You want me to describe outfit? Looking spectacular in a lovely shawl and a blue, ethnic-looking, quite Mexican kind of top. Underneath it is a pullover to keep us warm in these...
Canary yellow,
is that what it is, with a wide belt down the middle?
Polka dot rara skirt.
Black and white polka dot rara skirt.
And then some sort of Art Nouveau style...
That's it. Tights. And of course the obligatory black baseball boots.
Yeah.
And I've seen you, it's unusual for you only to have yourself to dress, isn't it? Because you do dress your staff on party nights.
I think pinned down in a death lock, yeah.
And it does make the place look pretty spectacular. So here we are. I mentioned last week the fact that, that one of the things we talked about in the last meeting was, as a way of helping people find places to live, it's necessary for us to be liberating a few of the government buildings that are being held on our behalf.
Yeah, well, I just hold the absolute resolute conviction that in the 21st century, in the first world, post-industrial revolution, post-technological revolution, that we shouldn't be having to pay for the basics in life, which includes accommodation, water, energy, and food, really. So the last three years, I've been really looking at all the ways that we can start to provide this, because I think that should be an absolute basic right for every single being on the planet, because if you can live without having to pay for it, which doesn't make sense to me that you'd have to pay to exist.
No.
That's got to be a fuck-up of nature, hasn't it?
Well, it means that a building is effectively being paid for all the time. It's never actually paid for so people can live in it without it. Mm. So somebody's always got a mortgage on it, or is always having to pay rent for it.
And that's nuts. You know, most buildings were built in this country 200 years ago.
And in the meantime, money's been pouring into the banks and the landlords for them.
So that they should always cost less to live there, and yet they're costing more and more and more.
Yeah.
How can that be? Doesn't make sense to me. So
no.
I've been occupying buildings for a good few years, you know, and now still looking at ways to, with the whole common law thing, looking at, you know, not paying council tax and water and gas and electricity and all that sort of thing, you know, but exactly, just liberating buildings for people, because there's a hell of a lot lying around doing nothing.
Yeah, and as you say, one of the reasons why people can't kind of cooperate with each other is because they're having to struggle to live.
Well, that's what's destroying the planet, basically, because people have to do jobs to get money to pay for their accommodation, and those jobs are destroying the planet. So it's a moral imperative that we stop paying rent and mortgages as soon as possible. You know, there's enough houses to go round. Why are we having to pay for them? It's ridiculous. You know?
So you've set up a little trust on the internet, haven't you?
Yeah, I've set up a trust. I've got a few, actually. But, I set up sort of property trusts, basically. And the mandate of those trusts is to... ensure that publicly owned buildings are being properly used for the benefit of the people. And that mandate has been entrusted often to the council. But I would argue they default on that often, and they leave these buildings lying around for years and years and years. So that's when my trust, for instance, would step in and do the service for them, basically.
Yeah.
Appropriating it for the people. Then if they want it back at any point and they can prove that they're actually going to use it properly, that's fine, but they're going to have to pay our expenses in the interim, you know.
And you're doing that by serving notice on them on that's the right, council yeah. before you occupy the building or move into the building.
That's right, yeah.
To make a beneficial use of it.
That's right, yeah.
And, I mean, I saw one of these buildings with you when I was down there, and it appeared that the place had been empty with the fridge on and everything for 3 years.
3 years, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's great, actually, because when we went in the building, we saw a big picture of passing clouds in the walls, so we knew that it was the right thing to
do. I thought that was really good. The funny thing about that building for me was that it didn't appear to actually have been used. It looked like the council had moved in.
It had, if you look carefully, it had been used. It's got all the scuff marks and stuff.
But the only thing that was there was sort of loads and loads of empty new files and a load of references to a five-a-side competition for the differently enabled. I mean, I'm interested. Mm. Why do you have any idea why there are so many buildings lying empty? Are they making money out of them or something?
Well, there's a lot of outsourcing going on. Obviously, they're starting to outsource and subcontract most things within the council. We know that, obviously, to private enterprises. And they're amalgamating a lot. And if you look at the big society mandate, I mean, actually, Darren from People's Public Trust and I had a look at the big society to see if there was some mandate stipulated within that. You know, because you hear big society, it's all about reawakening, you know, re-empowering the community. We're like, oh, great, maybe there's, you know, a mandate there to support incentives like the People's Public Trust. So we had a look innocently, just have a little poke around on Big Society website, so we could find anything. And the only thing we could find was the fact that the Big Society is basically the Big Society Capital Bank, which is formed by a consortium of the big banks, including Barclays, HSBC, Bank of Scotland, and that they are basically funding it with $400 million of their own money. Where the hell did they get that from? And the rest from $400 million from dormant bank accounts that they've kind of seized. It also seems a little bit dodgy to me.
And that money's coming from all over Europe, but fundamentally from UK, dormant UK accounts, isn't it?
Hello. You know, I don't know. I was never consulted about that. I don't know who makes this stuff up anyway. And it's all kind of brainchilded by the head of JP Morgan Bank.
And this is to encourage people to volunteer.
Well, we never saw anything about that, really. Yeah, to encourage people. Yeah, well, what we actually saw was that then basically, if you are a venture capital bank, you can then apply for some of this money, buy up local services, and then you're encouraged basically to amalgamate everything, strip them down, sack all the people, and then inspire voluntary service to those things. So basically, making everyone unemployed, and then getting to come back and do the same thing for free. And that seems to be what Big Society is, which is really quite unbelievable. So I think we're going to see an increased trend towards this. And obviously, as a result, there will be more and more buildings made available, which is...
So what we're saying is, what we're saying effectively is that they're reducing their manpower and they're moving more quickly to make savings than they can actually move the buildings on.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, it's hard to know exactly why. I mean, I know in where I live, they just built a massive council building, so I think they bought a lot of services there, but there's just so much waste. There's so much waste within councils. It's incredible, and these properties just sit around for ages, you know.
So you've got one that you're kind of going to be using as an office space.
Yeah.
How's that project coming on? Because one of the first pleas of these meetings was for some kind of administrative backing for us, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's one of the projects that you chose to take on.
Yeah, the idea is... you know, it's just about sort of igniting the energy, really, and allowing it to sort of to flow properly. And I think by having the office, then I can get some people in to be working there, to start some of the lean processes, to hopefully generate some funds that will then pay the administrative staff to do more processing of work that will create more funds, and then so it will exponentially grow, you know, and I hope I can start to trigger that you know, from January, basically, I have people in there doing that bit, that work, and it'll start to generate funds, and then it will, it can only grow then from that point. So at the moment, we need funds really to get these things
up. It is one of the things that's really holding us up. We decided, it was a failure boring. In communication, which we're addressing with the meetings, and the failure in funds, which we're pursuing.
We should be able to be generating funds by now. It's really ridiculous, and we have a group of all these amazing bright people, and half of them can't make it to meetings that have 20 quid for the train.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, I mean, loads of us are now working for donations because of the situation we find ourselves in. That's the way we're going, isn't it?
Well, it's fine. None of us really care about money or anything, but it's just the logistical thing. I mean, it's so ridiculous that someone can't come to a meeting because they can't pay for the train fare.
And yet we know, don't we, that the value isn't in the money. So in a way, we're at the cutting edge.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the things you're doing, by liberating buildings, making them available for people to live in, and you make them decent, don't you? You know.
I've even gone and bought all new brass door handles.
Brilliant.
And changed the door.
So take your building, make it look nice, change the locks, and give people the keys. And so, whilst you're not creating the funding, you are creating buildings for people to work in, and a willingness of people to come and work with us as well,
exactly.
isn't it? Because if they don't have to be struggling for the rent or struggling for a roof over their head, then they...
And it really is a struggle in London. If you see what the prices are like now, I mean, really, you're looking £200 a week for a room.
It's
kind of standard, actually, now. I mean, it's somebody... I don't know how people pay for it.
No, and this, of course, is anticipated by Grant Shapps, the housing minister. He's anticipating that these ups in prices and stuff will drive people further into boats and caravans and out onto the streets and all of that.
Well, there's a bit, this program recently, I haven't seen it, it's actually called The Great British Property Scandal.
Right.
On Channel 4, and apparently that's quite good, but it just highlighted how many buildings. So many, but you wouldn't believe how many. I mean, Hackney, there were 2,000 properties last year that were left empty for a year or more, just belonged to Hackney Council. You know, and some of those had enough accommodation for about 12 or 13 people, so, you know, you're
looking at... Big properties.
Yeah, I mean, that's enough to house 20,000 people.
Yeah, I think I heard that the amount of empty... Well, for a start off, we know that the building stock is only supposed to be 1 year ahead, and yet they've got 3 years' worth, enough land to build 3 years' worth of housing on. And I gather we've got another year's worth of new build, effective new build equivalent, which is actually empty property. So, in effect, we're doing them a favour by bringing these buildings back into service.
But who owns the construction companies? You know, who's making the money? Why do they want all these buildings? But it's ridiculous. They're always pushing for more buildings to be built.
What happens when
they're... a housing problem. But we've got a lot of houses sitting around empty. You know, something's going on.
Yeah. And really, as we've been suggesting, you can only really, at the moment, look at doing what you're describing to government buildings. It doesn't work so well with privately owned buildings, does it?
I wouldn't really try and take a house off a private individual. You know,
I've had private individuals encourage you to do the house next door and things, haven't you?
Yeah, the vicar actually. we spotted that he occupied the vicarage in Hackney, a really beautiful one a few years ago, and they all loved us, and they keep trying to get us to. They don't like the new neighbour who's bought it, so they're always trying to get us to re-squat it. But anyway.
So it's a good move to be trying to get the buildings and changing the locks and stuff. The other thing that people have trouble with, obviously, is covering the energy costs and things of the buildings that they're making temporary use of. Have you got any plans for...
Lucky we've got a friend here tonight who maybe you should interview, actually, but he's become his own gas provider because basically in the Gas Electricity Utilities Act, anyone can actually be a provider, you know, because the gas and electricity providers aren't actually providing gas and electricity, they're just collecting the money for their own administration costs.
So he's actually, this is a new one, I've heard people who've tried to have their own meters put in.
No, he's notified the energy department in some way, I'm not sure how.
This is very interesting.
He's become his own gas and electricity provider. So now all we have to do is we just buy your gas meter and your electricity meter online, comes and delivers it, and then he'll install it for you.
Okay, and what happens to the other people's meters that are already in there?
You notify that it's been abandoned, or if they don't come pick it up, then it's treated as abandoned.
Okay.
And so you can send it back to them or
okay, so,
whatever. In our case, it's just waited until they came and collected it for non-payment. And it was great, actually. I turned up at Plastic House the other day, and there's a load of guys there trying to look scary. And I said, can I help you, gentlemen? They said, yes, you need to pay £1,000, or we'll take your gas meter away. And I said, oh, right. And they said, would you get to pay cash or card? And I said, I don't intend to pay.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh. So they took the meter away. They said, right, we're going to give you a prepayment meter. I said, I don't want a prepayment meter, thank you very much. Okay. And they took it away.
They took it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we just installed our own one.
That's quite interesting. Just for a note, the last person we know who did that has, in fact, subsequently had a violent intrusion of his premises by the electricity board, who came and ripped his meter out and put a prepayment meter in. He's still trying to sort out what it is that he's going to do about that.
Well, what you need to do is you have to put notice private property onto the meter, and you notify them your fee schedule on it.
I'd be really interested to hear how that goes, but I think it's so. So you still followed what is currently the normal pattern, which is to wait for the existing owner to come and remove it. Or by non-payment, you did it.
That's what we did, because I think it's the least controversial, really.
Yeah.
It's least provocative. And
so really, passing clouds is a bit of an experiment for that, really. You can see whether you can do it elsewhere afterwards, presumably.
Oh, I'm just doing it all the time, you know. I'm just doing any building all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't even hesitate. I don't care what the consequences are. I know it's right. So.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of the ones that you had some years ago was a really beautiful sort of Georgian place, wasn't it? And once you got flown out of it, it was just left to go to rack and ruin again.
Yeah, that's what I'm really trying. You know, I've always been very sort of honourable with all the buildings. I've always said to the owners, you know, as soon as you've got something you want to do with it, we'll just give it back to you. And they've always sought to go through court. But to be honest, the last property, which was a council property, you know, we notified them straight away, and we stayed up for about 3/4 of a year, I think, and then they finally evicted us. And I went to go and see them. I said, why are you evicting us? You don't have any plans for property. We're housing, you know, 5 people and 2-year-old child. We've completely stabilised it. It was in a real state. We've repaired the roof. We've got a really well the neighbours. Why are you throwing us out? And they said, well, we don't care, basically. We just, you know, we're just going through the processes. And I said, but if you do, you do realise it's going to get squatted and again, but probably treated really badly. And they said, oh, well, we don't really care. We're going to put Sinex stuff.
Yeah.
Messy stuff up. And they did that. And then it just got re-squatted again a couple of months later. And those people absolutely trashed the place. You know, it really was not anybody. I mean, I'm not judging. I think it's totally cool that they're living in it and stuff, but it doesn't look very nice, because now it looks, again, you know, we planted beautiful plants everywhere and painted it up, and now it's got the Sinex still on the outside, and it looks really horrible, you know, with people living actually in squalor because they've got no electricity, water or gas, and it's quite squalid, a lot of dogs and stuff, and it's on a park right next to a school, you know, so it's not really the best situation at all. And so I went back to the council and I said, listen, you know, I told you it's going to get squatted. It's been squatted, and all that beautiful work we put into it, looking after the garden, making it look nice. I mean, it's really public. It's on a public park, right on a public park next to a school. You know, so it needs to be, it's not just down the back of an alley where no one cares. It's right in full view of everyone in the park and the school, and looks over the schoolyard, you know. So we really respectful, put up curtains, everything, so we look over the schoolyard, that sort of thing. I don't know these people, but I don't think they really are that conscious about how they do it. So I was really quite upset because we built a home there. They made a 2-year-old child homeless for no reason. I was really quite pissed off.
This sort of behaviour just makes you less likely to comply, doesn't it?
Well, you know, and I went there and I said, look, this is what I said would happen. You know, so you spent money evicting us for no reason, spending our own money evicting us for no reason, and now you're going to have to go through the process again and put the Sinex up again, you know. You could have just kept us in there. Mm. We looked after the place, kept the 2-year-old boy perfectly happy by a park, you know. We would have been full communication with you. What are you doing? They said, we just don't care because we'll dispose of the property. That's the terminology they use. We'll dispose, you know, this is my home.
Yeah.
You know, I spent months collecting bricks from a dump site, carrying them back in bags on my bike, building, you know, like really put a lot of labour and love into this place. And turn it from a complete derelict house into a beautiful cottage with flowers everywhere, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, they said, we're going to dispose of this property because, you know, it's worth this much and we don't care. We'll just sell it to somebody for $750,000. They'll strip it out. They'll just, you know, they'll just gut the place. We don't care, you know. Yeah. And I just now I think, you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
You don't care. Do you know what I mean? You don't care because you don't live on that park. You don't care about the fact now all the kids walking to school have to go past this, like, war zone.
Yeah.
You know, and that you don't care about, who the fuck are you, who are you representing?
Yeah.
You know, when you sell it for £750,000, am I going to get a reduction in my council tax? You know, am I going to get my bins collected more often? Like, how is that actually going to benefit the community? I don't think it is, you know. And so now I'm just at war, really. I'm just not, when I'm taking buildings off the council, they're not getting them back. They're not getting them back. Yeah. That's it. Sorry.
You've successfully brought us to within 4 minutes of the end of the programme.
I've now got a whole new attitude. So I have to keep you updated because they haven't caught on to me being there yet. So the actual kind of... They did come round last week, actually.
Did they? Yeah.
They came round to get access to the back with a whole load of workmen, so we just went full office mode.
Yeah.
And they said, we thought the building was empty.
They didn't notice the notice, then.
Well, they just, I don't know, they just, you know, it's the thing about councils, they just don't know what's going on, do they? So they've all been in the property and all around, but no one's told them it's the UK Transition Trust and all that sort of thing. So, but now I've just got the conviction now, they're not having the building back, you know.
Very good. Well, I don't envy them the competition. I don't envy them the competition. I think it's a really great place to end the show because basically one of the messages that I'm constantly trying to put across is that what we're seeing here is not necessarily the result of the ever, ever greater imposition of power and control. What we're starting to see here, what we're beginning to see, is the relinquishment of power and control. At the moment, the land and the buildings and everything is in the hands of people who don't know how to use it and don't care to learn. And the response of the people to that is for them to turn up and take a house and turn it into a beautiful place to live, which is what we would do if we were left to our own devices, what we're all working towards. And I think that's a good place for us to finish for today. We've got 3 minutes left on my time here. Dr. Rock's radio show, live on tnsradio.com with Eleanor and Nick M. I shall sign off politely so that Catherine of Gaia can get in for her show. And I'll be back with you next week with more stuff from who knows where. Sure, Dal will play us out with a suitable tune. Thanks a lot, Dal, for hosting for me. Thanks to tnsradio.com for letting me have this space. And thanks especially to ScottishSovereignsOnTheLand.ning.com, which I regard as my personal home on the interweb. Thanks for being there, folks.